Laudato Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Saturday, August the 9th, Armenia and Azerbaijan sign a deal on the renaming of a contested regional trade route. A heatwave strikes Gaza, exacerbating famine and starvation in the Strip. And 80 years after the division of the Korean Peninsula, the region's bishops speak of their desire for unity. In the Vatican, I'm Joseph Tullock. Armenia and Azerbaijan have signed a deal in the White House that will see a contested regional transit corridor be rebranded as the Trump Route for International Peace and Prosperity. As Stefan Bosch reports, the move is being seen as a major step toward peace between the two countries.
That is so great, and we'll hold up. How about holding up that document, all right?
U.S. President Donald J. Trump oversaw the signing of a document ending years of armed conflict. Armenia and Azerbaijan fought for nearly four decades for control of the Karabakh region, known internationally as Nagorno-Karabakh. Christian Armenians mainly populated the area, but it is located within Azerbaijan. The two nations battled for control of the area through multiple violent clashes that left tens of thousands of people dead. Azerbaijan reclaimed all of the territory in 2023 in a battle that forced more than 100,000 Armenians, who comprised about 99% of the population there, to flee. President Trump brought the sides together while speaking of a new beginning.
It's a long time, 35 years. They fought, and now they're friends, and they're going to be friends for a long time.
The two nations in the South Caucasus signed agreements with each other and the U.S. that will reopen key transportation routes while allowing the U.S. to seize on Russia's declining influence in the region. The deal includes an agreement to create a central transit corridor named the Trump Route for International Peace and Prosperity. Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan spoke of a historic moment in the relationship between the two countries.
We're laying a foundation to write a better story than the one we had in the past.
Negotiations will now begin over who will develop the Trump route, including a rail line, oil and natural gas pipelines, and fiber optic lines. Officials say at least nine developers have already expressed interest in turning a blood-stained region into an area of prosperity and peace. For Vatican Radio, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
Civilians in Gaza are facing worsening conditions as a heatwave grips the region. As Nathan Morley reports, the weather is making basic tasks like finding food and water nearly impossible.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, known as OCHA, says that residents are contending with hostilities, displacement and destruction. Aid entering Gaza remains far below what's needed, and relief missions continue to face delays. In southern Gaza, humanitarian partners reported damage to the electricity line, which served the South Gaza seawater desalination plant. It's the third outage in a week. OCHA also noted that airdrops landing across Gaza have reportedly killed more civilians. On Friday, the UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres voiced alarm over Israel's decision to take control of Gaza City. In a statement, his spokesman said the move marked a dangerous escalation, deepening the crisis and endangering lives, including those of remaining hostages. Mr. Guterres warned that the decision could lead to more displacement, deaths and destruction, compounding the suffering of Gaza's population. Israel's plan has drawn criticism at home and abroad, with opponents saying it violates international law, worsens the humanitarian crisis, and undermines ceasefire efforts. Israel's opposition leader, Yair Lapid, called the decision a disaster that will lead to many more disasters. Riyad Mansour is the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations.
Our objective is to stop Israel from taking this extremely dangerous escalation, and I hope that we collectively would succeed in avoiding such a crazy, irresponsible, dangerous, vicious plans that the Israeli political leadership is contemplating to do at any moment.
On Friday, the German Chancellor announced that Berlin would suspend all exports of military equipment that could be used in the Gaza Strip. He also voiced deep concern over the humanitarian situation. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
According to the United Nations, it is women and girls who have been bearing the brunt of the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza. In addition to the constant threat of sexual violence, the UN says that pregnant and breastfeeding mothers in the enclave face a daily struggle to get the help that they need. Lila Baker, the regional director for Arab States for the UN Population Fund, spoke recently about the situation for women and girls in the Gaza Strip.
It was already tragic in February when I went. I know Gaza intimately, and I've been there many times. I watch the news every day. I have family in Palestine. I thought that I was very well informed about what was going on, but there was nothing that could have prepared me for the level of devastation, both infrastructure and humanly, that I witnessed when I was there. You're overwhelmed by the destruction, overwhelmed by the smell of decay, the sounds, and then the conversations that I had with people while I were there. To say that they're heartbreaking doesn't even begin to tell the story. We have girls who say that every time they get their period, they curse the day that they were born a girl. We've had women and mothers who've said that they had to deliver, and sometimes with C-sections, with little or no painkiller or anesthesia in some cases, where babies are now 5 to an incubator. That's if you're lucky enough to have one of the health facilities that's still up and running, when 94% of the health infrastructure has already been destroyed. And I met too many families, too many women who'd lost their husbands, their kids, their parents. I cannot begin to explain the pain that was described. But allow me for a moment also to say that I witnessed unparalleled strength and determination and even optimism that there is a way out of this. If only we could bring this to a grinding halt and not have a temporary ceasefire, but a permanent one, and allow the Palestinians who live in Gaza and in other places in Palestine to live in dignity and start to rebuild those lives.
That was Leila Baker, Regional Director for Arab States for the UN Population Fund, speaking there to UN News. 80 years have passed since the division of the Korean Peninsula in the aftermath of the Korean War. In a message prepared for the occasion, the Korean bishops speak of their desire for unity among a people they say are now leading almost entirely separate, parallel existences. Thaddeus Jones tells us more in this report.
The title of the Korean bishops' message and document draws from Psalm 34, "Turn from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it." The text is dated August 15, 2025, the Solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Protector of the Korean Church. The message notes concrete support and actively participating in exchanges with North Korea based on cooperation and reciprocity. They will work together with those who wish for the North and the South to live together in the common home. The message writes, after 35 years of suffering during the Japanese colonial period, the nation finally attained liberation thanks to the providence of God and the protection of the Blessed Virgin Mary. But unfortunately, the joy of liberation was short-lived, and the division that followed continues to cause pain to this day. Since 1965, the Special Commission for National Reconciliation of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Korea had designated June 25th as the Day of Prayer for the Church of Silence, which in 1992 was renamed the Day of Prayer for Reconciliation and National Unity. Every year around that date, initiatives and masses multiply to ask for healing of wounds that have not yet fully healed. Thanks to the Commissions for National Reconciliation established in every diocese, the Church in Korea, the message emphasizes, began to provide a wide-ranging and diverse support to the people of North Korea and actively promoting exchanges through dialogue. The message notes that in the image of Jesus Christ, who brought about true peace by sacrificing himself, the Church is called to work to pass on a kingdom of peace to future generations. Finally, the bishops invite the faithful to pray that God's grace may heal the pain of division. And in this current holy year, which coincides with the 80th anniversary of the division, the message calls on all Koreans to trust in the love and grace of God as pilgrims of hope. I'm Dennis Jones.
The Holy See has published regulation on the awarding of public contracts by the Vatican. A new general executive decree has laid out the rules of transparency, control and competition in the awarding of public contracts by the Holy See and the Vatican City State. The Vatican says that the document is the fruit of close collaboration between various Vatican bodies with the aim of simplifying procurement procedures while maintaining high standards of transparency and fairness. The updated code aims to reaffirm the principles of transparency, oversight and competition, ensuring equal treatment of various operators and preventing discrimination between bidders, and it also aims to promote swift administrative action, efficiency, effectiveness and cost effectiveness. Now, the third international conference on landlocked developing countries has just come to a close in Turkmenistan. Speaking at the event, Archbishop Gabriele Caccia, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations, called for solidarity, justice and concrete action to eradicate poverty and promote integral human development. Francesca Molo has a story.
The Holy See has renewed its commitment to the world's landlocked developing countries, known as LLDCs, calling for real action to match promises in the fight for justice, dignity and sustainable growth. At the third international conference on landlocked developing countries, held on the 6th of August in Awaza, Turkmenistan, Archbishop Gabriele Caccia, Apostolic Nuncio and permanent observer to the United Nations, thanked the host nation and all involved. He described the gathering as a chance to reaffirm support for LLDCs and to offer long-term, tangible assistance, fostering integral human development. He noted that though diverse in context, LLDCs share systemic challenges from unsustainable debt and high transport costs to climate vulnerability and external shocks. Yet, he stressed, poverty remains the greatest and most urgent challenge, undermining human dignity by denying basic needs. Particularly severe in rural areas, poverty is not inevitable, but the result of unjust structures and policy choices that can change. The Archbishop highlighted the cultural dimension of poverty, noting that the denial of cultural rights and lack of education deepen inequality. He also pointed to unfair international trade as a major obstacle, and quoting Caritas in Veritate, he said trade can fuel growth if guided by justice and solidarity, and rooted in the universal destination of good, ensuring conditions for all to flourish. Archbishop Caccia warned that unjust trade rules leave countries with capital shortages and crippling debt, fueling environmental exploitation and worsening poverty. True development, he insisted, must go beyond the exchange of goods to include the transfer of scientific and technological knowledge, helping LLDCs become autonomous and resilient. Above all, he said, the human person must remain at the centre of all development strategies. Economic growth, he added, is a means, not an end, serving the common good. Bringing his address to a close, Archbishop Caccia recalled the Holy See's mission to be at the service of concord among peoples and to show unfailing solidarity with those held back by the indifference of those able to help. I am Francesca Merlo.
That's all we've got time for on this edition of Vatican and World News. But for more on all of these stories, you can visit our website at vaticannews.va, and you can also catch the latest updates on our Facebook, X and Instagram pages. You can also tune in tomorrow for our broadcast of Pope Leo's Angelus Prayer. That'll be at 12 midday Rome time. Many thanks go to Daniele Giorgi in the studio in the Vatican. I'm Joseph Tollock. Goodbye.